So what I'm going to do now is just give you a real quick sketch of what kind of actions are in the plan. There are two types of actions for all these 10 topics. There's one set of actions that says, here's how we're going to update this data, and another set of actions that says, here's how we're going to use it. So for example, we have a few actions in here on how we're going to update marine life and habitat information. So in the short term, we have a lot of other maps that we're going to be adding. In the long term, we're going to hit up agencies like the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, NOAA, Fish and Wildlife, some of these big data provider agencies, and say, okay, within 5 years, you need to update all of this marine life and habitat information so that it's fresh and dynamic and can be used to support decisions. And that's a really big deal, actually. And so there's a real Fed-to-Fed accountability that I want you to see there. How are we going to use this information? Again, lead agencies under NEPA are going to be, you know, using this information to have a better cumulative impact analysis, to better be able to describe the affected area, to have a better alternative site for a project, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the agencies responsible for leasing and licensing and permitting, the agencies responsible, like NOAA, for more of a consultation role. We're all going to be using this context of information to better to make our documents, our process more robust, more holistic, to put this to work. And again, there are management applications as well. Still, Lake and Bank National Marine Sanctuary goes to update their management plan. They need to use this information. So don't forget about the management application. All right. Now what I'm going to do is very quickly walk through a couple of examples of ocean activities. Not all of them, but a few, just so you can get a sense of what's in here. So marine transportation. We've got the Navy here. We've got the Coast Guard here. We've got some really big players. We all know that the marine transportation system is an interconnected system of waterways and ports that moves people and goods. So we know that it's a big driver of our economy, of jobs. But let's think about a place like Rockland. Let's think about the importance of passenger ferries to get out to island communities, for example. Okay? For some people, that is a lifeline to be connected to the coast. So marine transportation is extremely important, not just the big container ships, but the passenger ferries as well and everything in between. So, agencies with authority for marine transportation rely on access to relevant data to make decisions daily. Coast Guard, Navy, MARAD, Army Corps. And these decisions are going to become more challenging with a changing climate, right? Things are going to change, even with these traditional uses like shipping. Arctic has opened. The Panama Canal is widened. We're going to be getting bigger container ships that need to come into ports like Boston, for example, and we're going to need to deepen. We're going to need to dredge. We're going to need to deepen those ports. There's going to be a lot that needs to happen in terms of figuring out how to adapt to this new infrastructure. And so this is a really important opportunity for us to think about how we're going to adapt, okay, and what kind of context we need to put this use into. In terms of maps for marine transportation, just a couple examples here. We've got a navigation map on top in terms of an approach to Boston Harbor. The point I want to make here is on this automated information system data, this shipping traffic, commercial traffic. It's the Coast Guard collects this. The first thing the industry said when we went to them and worked with them on how to map this was, you got to break it up into vessel types. You can't show all this at once. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't mean anything. So you can see here, tug-tow vessel looks a lot different from passenger vessels. Looks a lot different from other types of vessels. And so that's one of the things we did, again, by engaging folks. We had Coast Guard, vessel owners, pilots, port authorities, everyone verifying this information. In terms of actions, again, you've got actions to update that information. The Coast Guard's committing to continue to give us vessel density information that then NOAA goes and processes with BOEM money, but anyway, we all get it done. We all get it done, and it's really important for that to be kept fresh, okay? They're also committing to use it. The Coast Guard's going to inform their operational aspects, like management of federal and private aids to navigation, for example. They're going to be using all this updated information. But it's not just about the Coast Guard using their own data for their own mission. It's about considering how marine transportation can be compatible with marine life and habitat issues that you can now see together with this information. It's about the Coast Guard taking a look at the highly trafficked areas by recreational vessels, that new boating study I mentioned. Now we have that to take a look at, et cetera.
We're going to move on.
Okay, so next example is commercial and recreational fishing. A big deal. The economic impact of commercial fishing in this region cannot be overstated. We have, again, the baseline assessment that we did has a lot of information about revenue in New England, total sales impact, et cetera, et cetera. We know that this is a critical economic driver for many communities, particularly here in Maine. It's important to our culture. It's important to our economy, et cetera, our livelihoods. Recreational fishing. There were 5 million recreational fishing trips taken in 2013. Also, really important driver here, but one that's not captured very well in terms of information. Now, impacts to proposed activities to commercial and recreational fishing has been a really big challenge. There's a dynamic nature of the fishery. There's a unique characteristics of every fishery. There's a basic lack of knowledge about the interactions between various fishing gear and any proposed activity. There's really complicated new things being sited out there, like these offshore wind farms, where you might have you might have different types of conflicts with fishing that have one type of conflict in the site assessment and surveys, a different kind of conflict when you're constructing the thing, and a different kind of conflict when it's in operation. So a lot of this, some of this we understand, a lot of it we need to continue to figure out. But conflicts can arise from various issues, and the biggest challenge here is communication difficulties and a general lack of readily available information to assess the potential impact on fishing. So one of the things we've been able to do through this process is get our hands around vessel monitoring system information, upper left here. So this, so NOAA collects this information for enforcement purposes. What we've tried to do is make it useful for planning. And again, just like the vessel tracks, the commercial shipping, we work with the industry, we work with the fishing industry here, and what they propose is to say, hey, can you please take a look at speed here? Can you try to tease out fishing from transiting? So we worked with all those different industries and determined at what speed is the appropriate cutoff to show what's fishing and what's transit, because that makes a big difference in terms of what you're trying to convey from a map. We also recognize that there are a lot of caveats to VMS, and that's the importance of the metadata. All those limitations are in our data portal. They pop up when you go and look at one of these maps, so we're very clear about the fact that this only covers fisheries that that are captured under VMS data, and there are lots of other caveats as well, but those limitations are really important to understand, and the plan encourages folks to work with state fishery managers and the industry as well to understand some of those issues. In the interest of time, I'm going to keep going here. In terms of actions, again, NOAA is committing to updating those vessel monitoring maps annually. That's another really big deal, one that was fought for. And so we can have up-to-date information to use as we try to figure out whether certain fisheries are potentially impacted by projects and proposals. The plan also states, in terms of how we're going to use this information, different ways that the Army Corps, for example, states that in the plan that this kind of VMS information is going to help them identify fisheries and fishing activity that might be affected when they affected by use of offshore sand resources. BOEM is looking at this information while they're reviewing proposals for offshore wind development. NOAA and USGS do scientific surveys. It's really important to understand who is in that space when you plan your survey, so you can communicate with those folks. So again, the purpose of this is to identify who needs to be engaged, who do you need to go have a conversation with based on what this initial regional characterization tells you about who else is using that space. Okay. Last example, I promise. Okay. Energy and infrastructure. As I mentioned at the very beginning, really, really exciting, interesting time here in New England with a lot of these being constructed. There's a lot we need to continue to understand and monitor. And this plan couldn't happen at a better time in terms of really putting out there all of this other information about marine life and habitat cultural resources, transportation, fishing, other human uses that need to be considered when we're siting offshore wind. The portal also gives you a sense of where is the wind resource. That upper left picture is, where's the wind? This has been called the Saudi Arabia of wind, New England, really the North Atlantic. There's a reason why we're first in the nation in terms of constructing that offshore wind farm. This is also a reminder that this plan and portal include proposed projects as well, not just what's been permitted, but what's coming. And that's really important for the public to know in terms of giving you a sense of what, you know, what is being proposed and how you can weigh in. Another couple examples of ways that the plan improves outreach to stakeholders. The relevant agencies here under energy and infrastructure, so BOEM, MARAD, the Army Corps, Department of Energy, they're all exploring ways of using the portal as an additional resource for posting agency announcements about proposed projects as appropriate. So they're all considering this as an opportunity to, again, get out early notification, early warning that some project has been proposed. BOEM is even developing an online outreach tool to describe their own process that will be linked to through this portal. So huge opportunity for the public here in terms of understanding how things work, having access to all this information, and really being able to weigh in a very informed way. The example I wanted to stress here is, this again is about energy and infrastructure, that the portal helps us identify important user groups like commercial transportation, like this is a multi-species fishing vessel density out here, and like the military, Joe in the back over there. This is an opportunity to see which other uses out there are likely to interact with new offshore energy developments and therefore should be engaged in the commercial leasing process. Again, it's an opportunity to identify who needs to be involved. Okay. Moving right along, and I don't know that we need to spend time on this other than to say agencies like BOEM and Department of Energy have a lot of cash. They're not here tonight. They have really big research programs. BOEM has the Environmental Studies Program, for example. They are, through this plan, really agreeing to make sure that the information they collect is made available, that it's accessible and usable. That's a really big deal. Those big well-funded study programs are also very important potential resources for our science and research priorities going forward as well. I'm not saying that the plan commits anybody to invest in anything. We are not committing future research dollars. But what we are doing is getting our act together so we can sell a portfolio to those agencies that do have the funds and are looking for the needs and to match those. And so I wanted to mention, particularly around energy, with so much to learn about the impacts of these kinds of new projects on fishing, for example, they're a good place to go to for additional research needs. Finally, I'll say, I said at the beginning that the marine industry, one of the outcomes is that this could be make things more predictable for marine industry. One of the things that BOEM is offering to do is to actually rewrite their guidelines to developers to ask them to go take a look at the data portal. So we're not just putting this plan out there and just leaving it there in hopes that someone will find it. These agencies are rewriting their guidance externally to ask people to go and take a look at it. So we're really trying to internalize this and make it operational so it doesn't just end up as just a plan. We want to be in implementation soon. And here we are. Okay, so in terms of plan implementation, this is chapter 4. This covers how are we going to work better together by putting in place some best practices. It covers how we're going to follow through with a plan, carry it forward into implementation by keeping the portal alive, keeping that information fresh, and all those examples I gave of different agencies committing to do that. And finally, it's meant to monitor and evaluate how we do, keep us accountable for implementing the plan, but also take a stab at monitoring ecosystem health. We put some initial ideas in the plan that we'd love your feedback on, like bringing the Ocean Health Index, for example, to this region, by piggybacking on an integrated Sentinel monitoring system that we started regionally. There's some good programs in place that we can maybe lend some attention to and use the regional planning body as an opportunity to really kind of help drive those forward and make sure that we're monitoring the change in our ecosystem as well as just monitoring the plan itself. Okay, so in terms of that agency coordination, what are we talking about here? It's really important for the best practices. It's important to call out who needs to work together early on to make sure we identify red flags, the impacted people, impacted resources. We've got federal agencies up here, state agencies. We've got fishery management councils, multiple. We've got tribes, et cetera. These are the folks that we're talking about in terms of best practices. How can feds work better with feds? Feds with states. Feds with tribes. Fishery Management Council. What can we do within our existing authority to make sure that we are not just watching the clock and waiting for the next document to be sent to the next agency, but having a conversation early so we can really help ourselves by understanding the project, understanding some red flags, understanding who we need to involve in terms of ocean users, have clear and efficient direction for applicants, and coordinate our review as appropriate so that we're just getting out in front. It's good government. It's really building on some of what the Army Corps does right now, which are these early, sort of pre-application meetings where you sit down and you just look at what you know and you make sure you know about really big issues early on so you can steer things in a different direction. Last, I wanted to show you some science and research priorities. What we did was just bin them in six big bins. I encourage you to go and take a look at the plan and get more detail. But this just gives you a sense of how we've organized our thoughts. And there's a lot here, and there's a lot that you've already heard me mention in terms of going through some of those topics. But we're going to need to make some investments in moving this forward and support some future research. And again, the regional planning body role is going to be to convene and to coordinate, not to duplicate what's already going on with so many other groups. That's going to be key. And again, the plan gives weight to these priorities, so federal agencies can drive our resources that direction. All right, so in terms of looping back, so we've gone kind of chapter by chapter, but how does this whole thing address those three goals at the beginning? That first goal is about ecosystem health. So I'm just trying to bring it full circle, maybe make some sense out of it, Richard, in terms of looping back here. So healthy ocean coastal ecosystems. So, again, our agencies are committing to use this information that is scientifically vetted, stakeholder vetted. We've developed this important ecological area framework and committed to advancing it. We've committed to developing our indicators of ecosystem health. Another chapter on restoration calls out some restoration projects that are ready to go and could advance the health of our region in that way. And then we have our science and research priorities. That second goal on effective decision-making, again, just going back through all those chapters and pulling out the highlights of what gets us toward that goal. We're committing to use this. The federal agencies are committing to use this information in our regulatory and management decisions, or to commit to keeping it fresh. We have some best practices to give us a how-to in terms of working better together and using the information. We're going to identify and engage other folks outside of government, as I mentioned, using the portal to see who is out there and having those conversations. And we're going to continue to exist, which we voted on last November. And so this regional forum is not just going to produce a plan and dissolve. We're going to continue. Everyone at that table feels that's really important to do, and we want you to know that. So really, this plan is the first step. The last goal is compatibility, and I just want to spend just a second on this first bullet because it's kind of hidden. It's in there. It's in those 10 topics. Some of consideration to compatibility. But think back to what I said about recreation. So we created all this new information. What does that tell us? It tells us that most of the recreation happens near shore. Makes sense, right? It's where the people are. But that means that for any newly proposed aquaculture facility, cables and pipelines that need to make onshore connections, dredging and navigation projects, near shore energy installations, this is all going to intersect with the coastal zone, right where that recreation is happening. How can we make that compatible? Well, by knowing where those recreational uses are and the intensity of them, that helps an awful lot. Aquaculture is another example. We had a longline blue mussel project that was proposed off of Cape Ann, about 8 miles offshore by some Salem State folks. And they wanted, they're looking out the ocean and saying, this is a busy place. Where the heck do we propose this? They went onto our data portal, and they were able to actually take a look at some of, in order to find some compatibility, for example, with marine mammals, with endangered northern right whale. They took a look at our portal, and they tried to understand where those animals are likely to be based on those maps in there, so they can lower their risk of entanglement of the gear and the whales. So, again, just trying to be smart about where we propose these different uses so that we can find some compatibility. Energy. Folks may not know that the Environmental Energy Act of 2005 allows for alternative uses of existing facilities on BOEM leases. So what that means is if there's an offshore wind farm out there, we can also co-locate aquaculture, for example. So we have a policy act that helps us, gives us permission to do that. So there are some things that are actually written into policy already that allow for compatibility. And finally, with sand, we need to, we can use the maps we have of regulated habitat areas, regulated marine life groups to try to avoid conflict so that we're going for sand resources that are not right smack in the middle of something that's already protected because we know where those places are. So, again, looking for compatibilities. That was a little long-winded, but what I wanted to do was just to encourage you to think about this kind of thing, like compatibility. Think about that lens as you go through those topics because it's in there. It needs to be more of a focus as we move into, I think, this next phase. Some other examples there of how the plan gets at compatibility in terms of using best practices, having conversations with real people on the water to understand their thoughts on compatibility, pursuing a better understanding of what might be compatible through our science and research. So what's next? I think we'll just cover this now, Steve, if you don't mind. Public comment. Yay. Here we are. We're at the very beginning. It's only been out for about a week and a half, so if anyone's read it, kudos to you. Mm-hmm. I have. So lots of different ways you can weigh in. Thank you for being here, the first of 9 public listening sessions. Richard, answer your question. You go to our website. There's actually a template that breaks it down by chapter. We're trying to sort of think of easy ways to weigh in on different aspects of the plan. So hopefully that is one way to do it. You can also just submit an email comment, or you can write to me, or come visit in Gloucester. Then after that public comment period's done, we're going to make sense of those comments, and we're going to revise the plan, and we're going to submit it to the White House, where it's going to be reviewed by those folks and hopefully be approved, and it will go into effect within this administration. That is the deadline, and that is our desire as well. Last slide is the list of public comment meetings. So here we are. We're coming back on June 20th to Ellsworth and to Portland as well, and anywhere in between. So please do visit our website as well, just for details on venues and times in case anything shifts for any odd reason. We don't want you showing up at the wrong place at the wrong time. So invite you to join us again if this wasn't enough for you. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. See you later.
Thank you, Betsy.